Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Crisis Next Door, a weekly report on the biggest conflicts around the world. With host Jason Brooks.
Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Protesters in Hong Kong have been braving ever-increasingly violent police tactics to get their message across to Beijing that they want to continue living under their own rules rather than mainland China's. Joining The Crisis Next Door to talk about the latest developments is Sophia Yan, China correspondent for the UK's newspaper Telegraph, based in Beijing, and a frequent visitor to Hong Kong, where she was previously posted for 5 years. Sophia, thank you for joining The Crisis Next Door.
Thanks for having me on, Jason.
The protests are entering their seventh month with no signs of slowing down, even the withdrawal by Hong Kong's government of the controversial extradition bill that sparked the demonstrations failed to quell the voices of the pro-democracy movement. Why do you think that momentum has gained in strength?
Well, protesters first came out in protest against a controversial extradition bill. And this was a proposal that would have sent suspects to face trial in mainland China, where the ruling Communist Party controls the courts. And that means 99.9% of the time, people are convicted. So there was a concern that those who were being sent potentially would not be facing a fair trial. Now, the Hong Kong government has since rolled that back. They have said they're going to formally withdraw that bill. But in the time that had passed, protesters got much angrier with how police were dealing with the situation. They're upset about police brutality. And really what underpins the whole situation is a much bigger issue at heart, which is that Hong Kong people are concerned freedoms guaranteed under an agreement that kicked in 22 years ago when the British Empire returned its former colony, now former colony, back to Beijing. That these agreements that were guaranteed in this international treaty are starting to disappear. So this concern is something that has come up time and time again. We've seen protests before in 2014. You saw the Umbrella Revolution in 2016. You saw the Fishbowl Revolution. A lot of these movements have kicked in, and these aren't the only ones. Even earlier than that, there were other mass protests over this very issue, this concern that their rights were disappearing. And so for Hong Kong going forward, this is a challenge that the leadership, both in the city and also from the Beijing level, from the central government level, they're going to have to deal with this because that particular concern is simply not going away.
Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam's annual policy address was interrupted by protesters, and she was forced to deliver the keynote over video. She promised billions of dollars in social welfare incentives to assuage the demonstrators, but that seems to have fallen flat. Is there any chance that Hong Kong's government can buy off the protesters?
One of the issues at hand here certainly is that the cost of living is very high in Hong Kong for a lot of these protesters who are quite young, in their 20s or 30s, some even younger teenagers. You know, for them, they don't necessarily see what their future will be like. And for a lot of them, buying a house in Hong Kong, one of the most expensive cities for property in the world, you know, they think that it's basically nearly impossible. So certainly these initiatives can help to a certain extent if young protesters are willing to kind of take it in. But it's an economic solution to what's really a political issue. And that's the difference. That's the issue here, really, with how the Hong Kong government has been responding all summer. And what protesters have called for are more democratic reforms. They want leaders who they think will listen more closely to what they want. And so what's happening here really is the difference in how Beijing would respond versus what Hong Kong, if it were sort of left to its own devices, might respond. And Beijing, the central government, you know, from China, what they see here is that if they can kind of, you know, put more food on the table and have more money in people's wallets, all this, that maybe people would then go off and go home and leave the streets. But again, an economic solution, a money solution, if you will, to deal with what's really a political crisis. And it's not one that can be sustainable in the long term.
Speaking of money, the NBA has found itself squarely in the maelstrom. LeBron James is the center of the latest storm after he criticized Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey for his pro-Hong Kong comments, and James is facing a mountain of criticism for siding with Beijing over democracy-craved protesters in Hong Kong. How is the NBA angle playing out in China and in Hong Kong?
You know, for a lot of different organizations, not just the NBA, but also nations, for countries who have said something about the Hong Kong protests, including the U.S., the U.K., I mean, China has issued very strong condemnation against these countries. I mean, the view from Beijing about all of this is that Western nations and organizations, these foreign influences, are fomenting unrest in an attempt to destabilize the Communist Party and its control and its rule and its power. So the way China sees this is not necessarily one of other organizations or countries exercising a freedom of speech. They really see it as a jab at what the Communist Party has to say and do in Hong Kong, which Beijing sees as its own. Certainly Hong Kong is a part of China, but it's been governed very differently for a very long time. And while a lot of these other, you know, the NBA, the US, the UK, these different governments, these different organizations, they have people and there are leaders who are making it clear that Hong Kong should be able to maintain its status quo, as was promised, you know, as I said earlier. But again, Beijing is just so upset that anybody would dare say what they should be doing in their own backyard.
How worried do you think Xi Jinping is about contagion from Hong Kong to Taiwan, Xinjiang, or Tibet? How successful has China's Great Firewall been in preventing leaks to mainland China? And, you know, what do mainlanders think about the protests?
You know, in the beginning, there was absolutely no mention in China. News and information is really tightly controlled here. So state media, again, controlled by the government, there was no mention of the protests whatsoever. It wasn't until July 1st, there was a big incident when protesters stormed the legislative building in Hong Kong. I mean, it was just completely chaotic. That was the first time that China started to broadcast a couple of scenes, and they have only used selective mention and selective images that show, you know, the violence. And certainly that's happening. It's not that it's not happening, but it's only showing one side of the story. It doesn't explain why people are so angry. Now, some mainlanders who are a bit more savvy, they might have a VPN, a virtual private network, and they can get over that great firewall so they can see this news, you know, all the stuff that's going on. Some mainlanders have gone to Hong Kong to join in the protests. Some of them feel that they should go see what is happening. But that's not the sentiment of the broad majority of this country. It's 1.4 billion people here, and the Communist Party definitely, its censors have a lot of control over what people know.
How difficult is it for a reporter such as yourself, based in Beijing, covering the protest? And how are police treating journalists in Hong Kong?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I mean, there can be a lot of restrictions in terms of what the government will do to frustrate the work of foreign reporters in China. And in Hong Kong, it's freer for reporters to operate, and that's largely always been fine. But in terms of being out on the front lines, you know, I find the police, just like it would be in any other situation, you know, both police and protesters, you know, the tensions are high. You see it. I mean, people are tired. They've been out in the streets, both sides, for months. Night after night for months. So you can see that the tensions are running high, and you can see that people are getting, you know, they are, like I said, they're tired, you know, and you can understand because everyone is doing what they truly feel is their duty. And it is impressive to see these protesters come out and take a stand and speak their voice, and also to see the police. They're very well trained. You know, they certainly have no shortage of officers to come out and do their job, you know, and it's the way that things are going in the city. I mean, there's no end in sight to these protests. Yeah, there's just no telling how they will end, really, and what protesters want, universal suffrage. I mean, this is something that Beijing will not allow. They've made that very clear.
And it definitely seems like the level of violence has gradually ratcheted higher over the past 7 months. Are there fears that the demonstrators may increasingly radicalize in the face of heavier-handed police techniques?
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen all summer. I mean, protesters have escalated their response to what they say is increasing police brutality. And it's getting pretty out of hand. I mean, every time these protests occur, definitely both sides kind of one-up. You know, they try to one-up each other. You can see it. And the protesters, they always say, well, you know, we don't have the gear the police have. We can do X, Y, Z, but these are homemade devices and homemade, you know, petrol bombs and things like that. But, you know, it's dangerous. You know, the police, they say that they're doing their best to defend and that they will only respond if provoked. And certainly, you know, the way things have gone, that's really what has, in a way, made these protesters kind of stay out and continue to stay on the streets, because they just feel that the amount of pressure, that the response to them has just been sort of outsized.
You're listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks, and we're talking about the Hong Kong protests with Sophia Yan, China correspondent for UK newspaper Telegraph based in Beijing. It seems that every move by Hong Kong's government only fuels the protesters, including the ban on wearing face masks in public gatherings. And from what I've seen, plenty of people are still masking their faces. How important of a role do masks play for the protesters?
In the beginning, the masks were really meant to help. Well, they do two things. One, to help protect against tear gas, and secondly, to obscure identities. There was a worry that with, you know, with artificial intelligence and with cameras and all this, with greater surveillance, that it would be much easier for police to identify protesters and then make arrests later on. So for protesters, it's been a tool that they've used for a really long time. And then for mainlanders, some of whom have come over to Hong Kong to join, it's even more important that they keep their identities obscured, because if they participate in one of these demonstrations and come back home to mainland China, they face a huge risk of being detained and getting in trouble for doing something that the Chinese government says is absolutely illegal, and, you know, it puts them in a lot of danger. So the anti-mask law is one of many things that the Hong Kong government has put in place. And like you say, it's just made protesters far more angry, because none of the measures that the Hong Kong government has put forward really respond to what they've asked for. They try to get at the issue. They kind of try to find other ways to mitigate the situation. And even though the main first demand has been met, technically, it was just too little too late. By then, protesters were so angry, and now at this point, it's hard to see how the government can respond to really roll back that sort of sentiment that's been fueled for so long.
You mentioned artificial intelligence, facial recognition. You live in Beijing, Sophia. How do you live knowing that you are being tracked and can be tracked at any time? Is that something you get used to, or how does one live with that?
Well, you know, I'm continually surprised at how AI is used here. I boarded a plane about a year ago using facial recognition. I got to the gate and the flight attendant told me to look to the right. I did. Something scanned my face and then, whoop, the gate opened. I was so shocked. You know, I was speechless. I mean, it's you know, the Chinese side, they say it's meant to make sure that people living here, that there's greater security for all residents, for foreigners, for visitors, and tourists, you know, who are coming in, for expats who live here, for Chinese who are here all the time. But there's certainly a certain big brother aspect to it. It's unclear to me living here where my data goes, who has my face, who's got my information. I definitely don't know. It goes to a lot of places, I suppose.
Apple also acquiesced to Beijing and removed the HK Live dot map from its app store after Chinese state media accused Apple of providing protesters with a cop tracker. How is that being received in Hong Kong?
Well, a lot of protesters have been targeting businesses that they think don't support the protests. So if you don't support the protests, the assumption is that you instead support Beijing. So protesters in Hong Kong have been very clear to, you know, they've been smashing windows and targeting storefronts, and they've gone after Starbucks. Apple certainly could be next because of this app issue. They are not backing down, the protesters, in terms of the targets. I mean, what they're going after are really symbols. You know, they've targeted things like China Construction Bank, which is a state-owned Chinese bank. You know, they've targeted certain Chinese brands, and they're trying to send a message. You know, the protests, in a way, there's a method to the madness. They want to make clear what they're trying to tell the world, which is that they won't take Communist Party influence, you know, lying down. They are going to speak out against it. And that's what they're trying to show when they're going after companies that they feel don't support what the movement is about.
America's role in all of this is interesting. China's foreign ministry says that if a pro-Hong Kong bill that passed the House of Representatives becomes law, It would seriously damage U.S. interest and that China would take strong countermeasures in response. Do you think there is a Trump factor at play for Beijing? He just pulled U.S. troops out of northern Syria, leaving its Kurdish allies exposed to a Turkish onslaught. Might Xi Jinping think Trump will be willing to ignore Hong Kong in favor of a grand trade deal?
The U.S.-China relationship is such a complicated, complex one. I mean, there's so many moving parts. There's, you know, the trade deal, as you mentioned, there's the Hong Kong issue. I mean, the thing is, with Trump in place, he's, you know, he tweets, he talks about China. He's unpredictable. And actually, I think for the Chinese, it's hard for them to sort of figure out how to respond and how to position themselves because he can change his mind at the drop of a hat. So in terms of how the U.S. is sort of positioning, I mean, these are two nations that aren't going to go away. I mean, these are two of the most, amongst the most powerful nations in the world, two of the world's largest economies right at the top. They have to figure out how to coexist, period. They have to learn how to play nice or be, you know, be at the dinner table together, whatever phrase you want to use there. So they have to find a way to work together. And certainly there's a bit of politicking in the rhetoric that comes back and forth. And there is always going to be some hot button issue that both sides can disagree on. You know, that will always be there.
I've read a number of observers in this say that compromise is impossible between the protesters and Hong Kong's government. Do you think that's true? And where would that leave Hong Kong? And is Beijing waiting for the last possible moment before sending in the PLA?
I think Beijing wants to try to avoid sending in the PLA as much as possible because, I mean, it has, you know, China has a history of doing this, Tiananmen Square 30 years ago. It's not a good history. It's not certainly not one that they want to necessarily go back to. It doesn't mean that they won't do it. It's not impossible. Now, in terms of compromise, for the protesters, one thing that a lot of them have told me, I've spoken and interviewed a lot of these protesters, they say that if the Hong Kong government could finally agree to pulling together an independent commission to look at how the police have handled the protests, that could go a long way in terms of just building a little bit more trust in the government. You know, it's not about compromise in a way. It's about finding a route back for protesters, for the general public, to trust the Hong Kong government, to trust the police, once called Asia's finest, to just have a little bit more confidence again in their leaders. So anything that the Hong Kong government could do in terms of just being able to win back some of that trust could go a long way. And again, just going back to that police commission, I mean, that's something that protesters have called for a long time now, for many months, because again, they were upset over police, what they have called police brutality in dealing with the protests.
Why do you think Carrie Lam and the Hong Kong government haven't compromised on that one particular issue?
Well, the police have said that this is an ongoing operation and that this, you know, they are open to considering this, but only after they're done with this current operation. I mean, they're certainly pretty busy right now with the protests. And Carrie Lam, you know, there's a lot politically going on behind the scenes that we're not always privy to. She is in charge of Hong Kong, and even though Beijing has said, you know, that it has confidence in Carrie Lam to deal with the situation, she doesn't necessarily always act alone. I mean, she can't really act alone. She has to act with either implicit or explicit backing from the Chinese Communist Party. And the Communist Party is not one that really likes to back down. In fact, it almost never does. Something on the scale of what's happening in Hong Kong could never happen in mainland China and certainly would not be covered and known around the world. And so any sort of perceived move to roll back how it stands from China's perspective, I mean, that's just a no-no. That's just not going to happen.
It doesn't seem like either side wants to back down anytime soon. It just seems like this is going to keep going on and on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the violence is definitely escalating. It continues to escalate. It's hardened feelings amongst a lot of people, and it's a difficult issue for people to talk about. You know, friends are being split. Families are being divided over this. And that's how intense the situation is right now. You know, even if a protester isn't necessarily one of these frontline protesters doing sort of the most aggressive radical actions, that feeling, this strain on society, it's there. It's really palpable. You can feel it when you go.
And Hong Kong has certainly captured the world's attention at that. Sophia, thank you so much for joining us here on The Crisis Next Door.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Sophia Yan, China correspondent for the UK newspaper Telegraph, based in Beijing, and a frequent visitor to Hong Kong, where she was previously posted for 5 years. Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Till next time.
The Crisis Next Door with host Jason Brooks is produced weekly.
If you have any thoughts for Jason, email him at tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com. Again, that's tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.